States and Western governments have claimed the Kremlin tried to kill him with poison. Moscow has denied all allegations of involvement. All right, all good to go now. In this segment, the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has claimed those 8 Katyusha rockets that hit the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad Sunday came from, quote, Iran-backed militias. Let's see how that went down in Iran and on social media. Robert Carter is the man with that story. Robert, over to you.
Thanks, Saeed. So, yes, you've summed up the story very, very well. Obviously, this is just one of the many cases in which the U.S. has essentially blamed Iran for everything that's happening in the region against them. But, of course, they don't contextualize the fact that the U.S. is deeply despised by many factions within Iraq. So the fact that they've decided to blame Iran so quickly and without a proper investigation or any evidence to prove that Iran was at all involved in the incident is just typical of the Trump regime. Obviously, Iran has responded to this very aggressively. They've made very, very clear that they have no role in the incident, which you can see on screen now. That's, of course, the U.S. Green Zone in Baghdad, where the embassy is located, and they, of course, are trying to defend themselves from the projectiles. But let's play a snippet of a response from the Iranian Foreign Office spokesperson, who not only responded to the accusation, but sent his own warnings to the U.S. as well.
I completely and strongly condemn remarks by America's Secretary of State. I think that the Iraqi government will definitely find the perpetrators and those who ordered the attacks based on its duties. I also warn the United States regime not to seek starting a fire and waging conflict in these days.
And like you said, Robert, they have scapegoated Iran all these 4 years. How has social media reacted to this?
Well, I can bring you the reaction that's caused the upset. It's the tweet itself from the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and he says in the tweet that he blames Iran-backed militias once again for flagrantly and recklessly attacking U.S. Positions in Baghdad, wounding Iraqi civilians and so on. Now, obviously, let's bring the Iranian reaction. Again, tweeting this on social media is the Foreign Office spokesperson, who says, "We strongly refute the irresponsible anti-Iran accusations, which blatantly aim to create tensions. Iran rejects any attack on diplomatic missions." That's a key point. The U.S. military presence is the source of instability in the region. No amount of spin and divert blame for its evils. A very valid point mentioned there. The third tweet I've brought up is actually an earlier tweet from the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, again addressing Mike Pompeo during one of his many anti-Iran tweets. He said earlier on that, Mike Pompeo, your own restrictions actually sanctioned U.S. companies out of Iran's markets with its unparalleled natural and human resources, and your illicit maximum failure policy cancelled Boeing's contracts for 88 million. So ultimately, the point here is that whatever Mike Pompeo's statement or position is on Iran, it's proven to have failed time and time again. So ultimately, going forward, these accusations, baseless accusations, are not going to win out or make any difference.
Maximum failure policy, that's quotable. Story two now. While some countries turn their backs on Palestinians and normalize ties with Israel, others are holding their ground, in this case, Pakistan.
Absolutely. So it's become apparent that the United Arab Emirates, which has already decided to throw its support and rub shoulders with the Israeli regime, totally backstabbing the Palestinian cause, has been reaching out to the Muslim-majority country of Pakistan to try and encourage them to do the same. Pakistan has reiterated its position, saying that there is absolutely no chance that they will even consider normalizing ties with the Israeli regime until the Palestinian cause is settled one way or another. So ultimately, this is a reiteration of an earlier policy which was made clear weeks ago by Pakistan. But clearly, and this is the point, the pressure is still on. It's being applied by the U.S. and its regional proxies. to keep trying to convince Muslim countries to normalize ties, which is, of course, against what the wishes of the majority of Muslims in the Muslim world want. The majority of Muslims maintain pro-Palestinian positions, Saeed.
Right. I have drawn a blank, to be honest. I don't know if you have a soundbite or anything. If not, please bring us the online reaction to Pakistan's position.
Yes, so of course there has been a heated online reaction, as you can imagine, some interesting points raised. So let's bring up the first tweet and see what was said. It's from Khan here, who says that it's nice, it's a good positive stance from Pakistan after such a shameful UAE-led narrative. So many Arab countries are betraying Palestine, so a bit of praise there for some non-Arab Muslim powers which are maintaining their pro-Palestine positions. Let's go to the next tweet and see what was said. Again, another valid point, I believe, that was raised on social media. This is from Michael this time, who says, it's worth noting that post-Abraham Accords, Pakistani officials keep insisting again and again that Pakistan won't recognize Israel anytime soon, but none of their statements have ruled out engagements with Israel that fall short of recognition. So again, perhaps there are other avenues in which Pakistan will explore, but we have yet to see any evidence of that, Saeed. Let's go to the third and final tweet on this subject, which I can bring you now. It's actually highlighting a very interesting point, I think. It's saying that Pakistan has taken tough stances this year against Israel, the US, India, and indeed has a rift with Saudi Arabia going on as well. They are in need of friends. And this Twitter user seems to believe that they will turn more towards China, Turkey, and possibly Iran going forward. So let's wait and see how this regional dispute pans out.
Let's wait and see, as you say, Robert Carter, with those stories, Robert. And that story segues nicely into this other one. Two more stories we're going to bring you in this segment as well from what's been trending on social media. Days after the U.S. formally removed Sudan from its list of state sponsors of terrorism, the country's Congress has passed a bill restoring Khartoum's sovereignty immunity. Well, let's discuss that story with Ahmed Kabbalah, who joins me now to look at the fine print. Ahmed?
Hi, Saeed. Yes. So this was a sticking point in the negotiations. So although on the 14th of December, Saddam was formally lifted from the state sponsor of terror designation, it basically refused to fully accept normalization with Israel unless Congress passed this law which would protect it from future legal action from victims of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden's terrorism. Now, the US was trying to claim that because Osama bin Laden lived in Sudan from 1991 to 1996, that the crimes of Osama bin Laden thereafter are somehow a responsibility of Sudan. Now, Sudanese people and supporters of Sudan have said, well, before 1991, in 1989, the US was backing Osama bin Laden, supporting him, financing him in the Afghan war against the Soviets. So if Sudan's responsible for the crimes of Osama bin Laden, then so is the US responsible for the crimes of bin Laden. Now, we accepted paying $335 million of compensation, but we did not want to be in endless litigation for crimes that have nothing to do with the Sudanese people.
And now the timing of it all is also important. The offer for normalization also came at a time when Sudan is in economic turmoil. Its currency has lost 50% of its value. Bring us what the online opinion has been on this latest development.
Yeah, so the first tweet says, you've given Sudan immunity for future lawsuits by the victims of the 1998 American embassy bombings in East Africa, and provided Sudan with close to $1 billion in US financial aid and loans. That's not an agreement, that's a short-term bribe. And they're right, the way that they pushed Sudan to normalize relations with Israel was a combination of the carrot and the stick. The stick was, if you don't do this, the economy will free fall, there'll be economic ruin, and if you do this, we'll give you financial aid, financial loans, and we'll open up
valid
markets.
Point, Ahmed. Can you bring us the other tweet as well, since we're fast running out of time? Thank you.
Yeah, final choice, Sudan to secure win in Congress tonight, partial immunity and millions in assistance and debt relief, turns a page on Omar Bashir's days and clears path for Israeli normalization. And it actually links to our next story, because it was passed in a bunch of bills in Congress along with the stimulus package, and many Americans are angry that Sudan has been given $700 million, Israel has been given $500 million, yet American citizens are only given $600 one-off payment in their latest stimulus package. And Nancy Pelosi, who is the Speaker of the House, we've got this VT in which she's announcing this stimulus package.
We also have in the legislation direct payments, which were not in the Republican bill, to America's working families. I would like them been bigger, but they are significant, and they will be going out soon.
What was it in that soundbite that has caused so much outrage, Ahmed?
Yes, some people are angry that she said it would be significant. Now, she's worth over $180 million. Her refrigerator is apparently worth $25,000. She eats gourmet ice cream, yet she's saying a one-off payment at $600 is significant. Now, we've got a tweet that says, something to think about. Domino's is giving their employees $1,200 bonus, but our government is only giving us $600. How does that work? Now, Domino's is a fast food restaurant chain. They're giving $1,200 bonus to their employees because they've been doing so well, yet the US government can only afford $600. Final tweet from Alan McLeod says, there's only $600 for you in this corona relief bill, but there's $33 million to overthrow the Venezuelan government. Now, within this bill, there's $34 million in democracy promotion in Venezuela, which is basically pseudo language for regime change operations.
Right, someone has been doing the math, Ahmed. First, it was Ahmed Caballo with those stories, Ahmed. Thank you. And that's all the time we have for this broadcast.
This is IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment. In the limelight. Outgoing Attorney General William Barr distanced himself again from President Donald Trump on Monday, saying he saw no reason to appoint special counsels to oversee the Justice Department's criminal investigation into Hunter Biden, son of President-elect Joe Biden, or to investigate Donald Trump's baseless claims of widespread voter fraud in the election. At a news conference to announce charges in an unrelated terrorism case, William Barr, who's stepping down in 2 days, said he did not see any reason to appoint a special counsel to oversee the tax investigation into the younger Mr. Biden. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Katie Benner. The piece is titled, Barr Sees No Reason for Special Counsels for Hunter Biden or the Election. Stay with us for more of Katie Benner's article. Outgoing Attorney General William Barr distanced himself again from President Donald Trump on Monday, 21st of December, saying he saw no reason to appoint special counsels to oversee the Justice Department's criminal investigation into Hunter Biden, son of President-elect Joe Biden, or to investigate Donald Trump's baseless claims of widespread voter fraud in the election. At a news conference to announce charges in an unrelated terrorism case, William Barr, who's stepping down in just 2 days, said he did not see any reason to appoint a special counsel to oversee the tax investigation into the younger Mr. Biden. "I have no plan to do so before I leave," William Barr said. "To the extent that there is an investigation, I think that it's being handled responsibly and professionally." He also said that he would name a special counsel to oversee an inquiry into election fraud if he felt one were warranted. "But I haven't, and I'm not going to," William Barr said. After President Trump's loss to Joe Biden, the president and his allies have seized on conspiracy theories about election fraud and considered legally questionable actions to cast doubt on the validity of the outcome or even seek on overturning it. William Barr's statements in his final days on the job seemed to signal that there was no appetite at the Justice Department to be drawn into any such efforts. But it is unclear how much pressure President Trump might put on William Barr's replacement, Jeffrey A. Rosen, the current Deputy Attorney General, who will lead the department on an acting basis for the remaining weeks of the president's term, and whose approach to dealing with Mr. Trump is unknown. At a minimum, William Barr's statement on Monday gave Jeffrey Rosen cover not to appoint special counsels to look into voter fraud or into Hunter Biden, and would make the optics of any decision to go ahead with such appointments more difficult for both Mr. Rosen and President Trump. The incoming Attorney General, Jeffrey A. Rosen, has not signaled his specific intentions, but he has held discussions about the ramifications of appointing a special counsel to oversee the investigation into Hunter Biden, according to a person familiar with those conversations. He said in an interview with Reuters news agency last week that he would make decisions on all issues, including the potential appointment of a special counsel on the basis of the law and the facts. William Barr's comments are certain to further poison his relationship with President Trump, who believes that the Attorney General should have more forcefully used the Justice Department to attack Joe Biden and his family in the weeks running up to the election and to cast doubt on the results after the votes were cast. Long been regarded as Donald Trump's most loyal and effective cabinet member, William Barr, a believer in strong presidential power, brought the Justice Department closer to the White House than any Attorney General since John Mitchell, who ran President Richard Nixon's re-election campaign and was deeply involved in the Watergate scandal. William Barr's handling of the special counsel's investigation into the intersection of Russia and Donald Trump's 2016 campaign amounted to a gift to the president. He presented it in the best possible light for Donald Trump before his public release, and ultimately concluded that the president had not obstructed justice, despite his efforts to shut down the inquiry. The Justice Department's independent inspector general found that the senior officials at the Bureau had sufficient reason to open the investigation. A judge later called William Barr's summary of the report by the special counsel, Robert Mueller, misleading. Convinced that the FBI had overstepped its authority in investigating the Trump campaign, William Barr asked the federal prosecutor, John Durham, to look into the origins of the Russia investigation. In October, the Attorney General appointed him to be a special counsel with a mandate to continue exploring whether the inquiry was wrongfully opened. William Barr broke with long-standing norms when he spent months leading up to the election echoing Donald Trump's unsubstantiated claims that mailing ballots would result in widespread voter fraud. In strikingly political remarks for an attorney general, he later said the country would be irrevocably committed to the socialist path if the president were not re-elected. He also approved the withdrawal of criminal charges against Michael Flynn, the president's first national security advisor, and overruled prosecutors who requested a long sentencing recommendation for Roger Stone, one of Donald Trump's longtime advisors. But his relationship with the president fractured after the election, after he said in an interview this month that he had not seen voter fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. Tensions between William Barr and Donald Trump escalated after it became clear that Barr had kept the investigation into Mr. Biden's son under wraps during the presidential race. While it is department policy not to discuss investigations that could affect the outcome of an election, President Trump accused his attorney general of disloyalty for not publicly disclosing the matter during the campaign. With the president growing more furious and his allies constantly attacking William Barr on social media and cable news for his perceived disloyalty, President Trump said last week that William Barr would be departing this coming Wednesday. President Trump's efforts to overturn the election have grown more frantic since he announced that William Barr would step down. On Friday, he discussed with aides in the Oval Office about naming Sidney Powell to be a special counsel overseeing a voter fraud inquiry. Sidney Powell, who worked as a lawyer for Trump's campaign, has promoted unfounded conspiracy theories that Venezuela rigged the presidential election using doctored voting machines. Sidney Powell met briefly with Donald Trump on Monday, a person briefed on the discussion said. Separately, the president met with a group of House Republicans, including Representative Mo Brooks of Alabama, who is pushing a congressional challenge of electoral votes from a half dozen battleground states that were won by President-elect Joseph R. Biden.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on October 12, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participants at the joint graduation ceremony held at the Imam Ali Military Academy.
As I said, rationality means making the correct calculations. Being afraid, running away, and evacuating the arena does not correspond to rationality. Rather, it corresponds to cowardice, fleeing, and the like. Rationality means making the correct calculations. Of course, the enemy is trying to promote the wrong meaning of rationality, and some people repeat the enemy's words in an unconscious way. When you see that they adopt certain measures and engage in propaganda efforts against our missile resources, our military organizations, and our regional capabilities, which are very important for our defensive power, you witness that American prattlers and babbling thugs say whatever crosses their mind in a nonsensical and uncalculated manner. Wherever they go, they speak against the Islamic Republic. This is because our fundamental resources have been achieved on the basis of thorough calculations.
And love or lunacy, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
Allah's favor, these resources will move forward. The enemy's propaganda result from their backwardness in this arena and from their fear. Therefore, the important point is that we preserve our calculation system, that we keep it healthy, and that we prevent it from being disrupted. If our calculation system is disrupted, many of our resources will be gone and our good conditions will turn into bad conditions. It is not only the armed forces, the defensive apparatus, and our defensive power that should be based on rationality. If we wish tasks on all important matters related to the management of affairs in the country, particularly in the Islamic Republic, because Islam has placed great emphasis on rationality, reason, and thinking, to move forward in the correct direction, we should act on the basis of rationality.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new coronavirus strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this for sure, but it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be." He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists use to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article authored by the staff writer of the Associated Press News Agency under the heading, "Are New Coronavirus Strains Cause for Concern?" Please stay with us to hear more about the issue. Reports from Britain and South Africa of new coronavirus strains that seem to spread more easily are causing alarm, but virus experts said it's unclear if that's the case or whether they pose any concern for vaccines or cause more severe disease. Viruses naturally evolve as they move through the population, some more than others. It's one reason we need a fresh flu shot each year. New variants or strains of the virus that causes COVID-19 have been seen almost since it was first detected in China nearly a year ago. Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Here's what is known about the situation. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this, for sure, but it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be." He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists used to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. Viruses often acquire small changes of a letter or two in their genetic alphabet just through normal evolution. A slightly modified strain can become the most common one in a country or region just because that's the strain that first took hold there, or because super spreader events helped it to become entrenched. A bigger worry is when a virus mutates by changing the proteins on its surface to help it escape from drugs or the immune system. Trevor Bedford, a biologist and genetic expert at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, wrote on Twitter, "Emerging evidence suggests that may be starting to happen with the new coronavirus adding We've now seen the emergence and spread of several variants that suggest this, and some show resistance to antibody treatments. Dr. Gupta said in April, researchers in Sweden found a virus with two genetic changes that seemed to make it roughly two times more infectious. He said about 6,000 cases worldwide have been reported, mostly in Denmark and England. Several variations of that strain now have turned up. Some were reported in people who got them from mink farms in Denmark. A new South African strain has the two changes seen before, plus some others. Gupta said the one in the UK has the two changes and more, including aid to the spike the protein. It's called a variant under investigation because its significance is not yet known. A World Health Organization official recently said the strain was identified in southeastern England in September and has been circulating in the area ever since. Will people who had COVID-19 from an old strain be able to get the new one? Will it undermine vaccines? Former U.S. Food and Drug Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said on CBS, "Face the Nation, probably not." Gupta agreed, "Unlikely." U.S. President-elect Joe Biden's Surgeon General nominee Vivek Murthy said on NBC's Meet the Press that there is no reason to believe that the vaccines that have been developed will not be effective against this virus as well. Several experts noted vaccines produce wide-ranging responses by the immune system beyond just those to the spike protein. Dr. Manoj Saloy, the chief science advisor for the U.S. government vaccine distribution effort, said on CNN's State of the Union, "The possibility that new strains will be resistant to existing vaccines are low, but not inexistent." Bedford agreed, "Up to now, I don't think there has been a single variant that would be resistant." He said, "I think this particular variant in the UK is very unlikely to have escaped the vaccine immunity." Bedford wrote on Twitter, "I'm not concerned because a lot of changes in the genetic code would probably be needed to undermine a vaccine, not just one or two mutations." But he wrote, "Vaccines may need fine-tuned over time as changes accumulate, and changes should be more closely monitored." Murthy said the new strain doesn't change the public health advice to wear masks, wash hands, and maintain social distancing. More and more European countries are suspending flights to the UK as the new strain of coronavirus takes hold in London and southeast England. Belgium and the Netherlands were the first to suspend all flights, with the former all banning train travel to the UK. They were joined by Austria and Italy, which have now also banned flights to and from the UK. Meanwhile, Germany is also understood to be considering similar action, with the German government official telling the DPA news agency that restrictions on flights from Britain are a serious option. Furthermore, the French news channel BFM TV has reported that France, too, is seriously considering suspending flights and trains from the UK, and so that and the French are looking for European coordination. The rush by European countries to suspend flights from the UK comes in the wake of Boris Johnson's introduction of a Tier 4 level of COVID-19 restrictions for the capital city London and the southeast of England region. The latest measures are set to cover the Christmas celebrations period and will apply until at least the beginning of 2021. According to the top British health officials, The new variant of coronavirus is not necessarily more deadly, but it is proving to be up to 70% more transmissible. The Tier 4 measures in the Southeast will apply for an initial two-week period, with a review due on December 30. The crisis spurred by the new virus strain is compounded by the prospect of a no-trade deal Brexit, thus presenting the British government with a perfect storm of major problems. To that end, Prime Minister Boris Johnson chaired a meeting of the government's emergency committee, COBRA, later on Monday, December 21st, in order to contain the crisis.
Around the world with reporters.
Yemeni scholars came together in the capital Sana'a to condemn some Arab states for normalizing ties with the Israeli regime. They said that with signing normalization deals with Israel, these states have betrayed the Palestinians.
We've announced the continuous processes of normalization of ties with the Zionist entity. We are here to warn other Arab states not to follow the same path. Any normalization deal amounts to the betrayal of the blood of the martyrs who sacrificed their lives to protect the occupied lands against Israeli aggression.
Morocco has been the last Arab state to normalize ties with Israel after Bahrain, the UAE, and Sudan over the past months.
The scholars of Yemen reiterate their opposition to any recognition of the Zionist enemy. We believe that it amounts to betrayal of the Muslim values. This will pave the way for further aggression against the Palestinians.
The normalization deals have already sparked outrage among the public in the Muslim world, with a pro-Palestine sentiment runs deep. Meanwhile, Palestinians from all political factions have been unanimous in their condemnation of the normalization deals. They seek an independent state in the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip with the East Jerusalem Al-Quds as its capital. So the normalization, they say, serves as betrayal of their cause.
Yemeni scholars voiced their support for the Palestinians, warning Arab world to adopt a united stance against Israeli aggression. They say the normalization deals will only embolden Israel to press ahead with its oppressive policies against the Palestinians. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The news was delivered Saturday that the southeast and east of England, including the capital London, were descending into Tier 4 COVID-19 restrictions. This was sparked by the discovery of a new variant of the virus that is up to 70% more transmittable.
Given the early evidence we have on this new variant of the virus, the potential risk it poses, it is with a very heavy heart, I must tell you, we cannot continue with Christmas as planned. In England, those living in Tier 4 areas should not mix with anyone outside their own household at Christmas, though support bubbles will remain in place for those at particular risk of loneliness or isolation.
After the announcement, chaos ensued as people scrambled to leave ahead of the midnight deadline. People bundled up presents and essentials and set out hoping to save their Christmas plans after England's Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty suggested they unpack.
I want to put some numbers out there because I think that helps to explain why I'm going to give the answer that I'm going to give. But my short answer would be, please unpack it at this stage.
Officials say that the ban on Tier 4 Christmas visits is unenforceable. And to make things worse, hundreds of flights were cancelled after the UK's closest allies cut transport with it due to fears about the new COVID-19 strain. The decision meant closing off the UK's most important artery with mainland Europe. A step British Transport Minister Grant Shapps said was surprising, especially as, according to him, the new strain is already in continental Europe.
we tend to be more aware of the variants faster. And there have been thousands of variants of coronavirus. It's just that the particular one that we've seen in Kent and London, the thing which has led to the Tier 4 lockdown, is a particularly virulent variant of the virus. So it means that it spreads more easily. We've detected that first, but we know already that the cases have been found in continental Europe and other countries.
The chaos hit just days before the United Kingdom was due to exit the EU's orbit with or without a trade deal. Brexit negotiators Michel Barnier and Lord Frost met in Brussels Sunday, but yet again an agreement was not reached. In view of the situation, Brexit negotiations could be extended. Bianca Rahimi, London.
In each of the 27 EU nations, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine will start being used in less than a week's time, on the 27th of December. The European Medicines Agency has given its approval and has played down concerns that the new highly contagious COVID-19 variant spreading in England will not respond to the vaccine.
These are issues that need to be fully scientifically assessed. At the moment, we can say that there is no evidence to suggest that the vaccine will not work against the new variant of the coronavirus.
The UK is now isolated as countries around the world impose travel restrictions due to the new, more infectious strain of the coronavirus. There has been travel chaos for millions. People have been trying to get out of the UK before travel bans are enforced. There is major disruption at the main trading corridors between the UK and EU. Global markets have been in disarray due to the deepening health crisis in Europe. Rather than waiting for other countries to make the first move, epidemiologists are saying the British government should have done the responsible thing and blocked all non-essential travel from the UK. We have been getting reactions from members of the public in Brussels.
It's maybe a little bit too late to close borders, and I don't think closing borders doesn't help either.
We really have to stick to the situation, to respect it, and then we will, as soon as possible, be able to open everything again.
It's a new thing, we don't know what it is, but we need to act, I think, faster, and maybe in the beginning a little bit harder.
If government imposed like that strict lockdown like they did in South Korea or like North Korea and China, I think there will be riots here.
The European Medicines Agency says it is currently in contact with 46 vaccine developers, and it expects to approve the Moderna jab on the 6th of January. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Can you download an HD movie in 1 second? Thanks to 5G internet, yes. While around 50 countries have already launched the fifth-generation broadband service, Iran is also jumping on the wagon to roll out the high-speed internet network. Iran's Science and Technology Vice Presidency says 5G coverage will for now be available in the country's Kish Island and will soon reach other regions.
We can now say that Iran is one of the first countries that stepped into this modern technology. We have built the needed infrastructure in Kish Island and at the same time are working on major locations such as Tehran to roll out the technology.
Iran successfully tested 5G in July when users reported a 1.5 gigabit per second of download speed on their mobile phones. However, Iran's ST Vice Presidency says 5G for now will not be offered for household applications and will initially be limited to industrial uses, such as smart transportation.
With 5G's low latency, reliability, and powerful connections, we can create an integrated transport network that connects all cars together and also connects personal cars to police for instant guidance and warnings.
Not also in our country, but also most of the countries, 5G infrastructures aren't implemented yet. So we need past time for implementing these infrastructures. And after that, we can use the use cases of 5G.
The deployment of 5G technology is expected to boost Iran's infrastructure for accommodating sensitive online services through domestic servers. Experts say this will significantly increase the cloud computing capacity in the country.
Some 70 million Iranian SIM card owners currently use the third and fourth generation of mobile internet. They still have to wait to see the 5G icon appearing on the top corner of their smartphones. but Iran's ICT officials promised to make 5G internet available for widespread personal use by the end of 2022. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Austrian government announces a third hard lockdown starting immediately after Christmas on the 26th of December. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz had promised that the second lockdown, which ended 2 weeks ago, would save Christmas. But that mission has proven to be nearly impossible. Like the majority of nations around the world, Austrians are not expecting a regular Christmas or New Year's Eve. But things don't look entirely bleak, as vaccinations are set to begin across Europe and Austria on the 27th of December. With every week, says Chancellor Kurz, we get a step closer to ending this pandemic.
Measures will become stricter until the seven-day incident is below 100, and in mid-January there will be free mass tests for everyone who wants to take part.
The goal is to keep weekly cases below 100 per 100,000 people. That number currently stands at just under 200. The lockdown is expected to end on January 18th, but only for those who agree to get tested. For those not willing to take the test, the stay-at-home order and curfew will be in place for another extra week. Health Minister Rudolf Anschober expressed concern over the dramatic increase in mortalities across the country over the last 2 months.
With no further measures, at the end of the month, new cases could range between 1,300 and 3,000 cases a day.
For now, the new restrictions mean everyone entering Austria from abroad has to go into a 10-day quarantine, which can only be cut short after 5 days with a negative PCR or antigen test. Over the Christmas holidays, more contacts and therefore more cases are expected, and the latest preventive measures announced by the government are meant to bridge the time until the vaccine can be rolled out in the new year. Homolezki, Vienna.
The coronavirus pandemic has worsened the dire economic conditions in the blockaded Gaza Strip, leaving a huge impact on the livelihoods of people in the tiny coastal enclave. The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has already caused a sharp decline in the standards of living, as well as alarming levels of unemployment and poverty in the seaside sliver even before the pandemic. Meanwhile, tight lockdown measures to contain COVID-19 have had grave economic implications on all sectors in the Gaza Strip. Experts say the coronavirus pandemic has brought the blockaded enclave's economy to a virtual standstill, driving more Palestinians into poverty.
Economy is a vital lifeline, and the Israeli blockade has crippled this lifeline. The coronavirus restrictions have only worsened the situation. Currently, around 85% of the population live below the poverty line with an average income of only $2 a day.
Lockdowns are directly affecting thousands of daily wage laborers and their dependents and resulting in suspension of operations in the vast majority of businesses in the Gaza Strip. The coronavirus pandemic has added to the substantial financial strain already felt by many families living in the Gaza Strip.
The coronavirus pandemic has affected economies all over the world. In Gaza, we're suffering the most amid this pandemic because of the ongoing blockade and the lack of resources.
The economy is in a very bad shape, especially during lockdowns, and shops and restaurants are closed. Many businesses had to lay off workers because they can't pay their wages.
The Gaza Strip has logged more than 33,000 coronavirus infections since late August. In an attempt to curb the rapid spread of the deadly virus, local authorities currently impose lockdowns from 6 p.m. until 7 a.m. and a complete curfew on Fridays and Saturdays.
We have imposed lockdowns as part of our preventive measures to slow the spread of the deadly virus. The Ministry of Interior is sparing no effort to minimize the number of coronavirus cases. The number of infections in the Gaza Strip is very high, and we are trying different approaches to contain the virus.
Experts say the pandemic will exacerbate the underlying humanitarian crisis that has gripped Gaza for years.
The COVID-19 pandemic is adding extra strains on Gaza's ailing economy. All economic sectors in the impoverished enclave are already suffering because of the Israeli blockade and multiple wars. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A nationwide car protest of a Spanish education reform reached Barcelona as the country grappled with a coronavirus pandemic. The procession, organized by a group advocating bilingual teaching in Catalonia, blocked traffic to draw attention to a law that will eliminate Spanish as a vehicular language in education. The reform, known as the Celá Law, in reference to Spain's education minister Isabel Celá, was approved by a majority of left-leaning lawmakers in Spain's Congress of Deputies in November. It was hailed as a major breakthrough in promoting equal opportunity in public and concerted schools, increasing funding and access to scholarships, and ending sex segregation. But the main bone of contention is the future of Spanish as a common language across the 17 autonomous regions. The deadlock over school reform takes special significance here in Catalonia, where the pro-independence movement has been gathering pace. Although Spanish is not the main language in most schools in this autonomous region, opponents of the reform say that consecrating a law that scraps Spanish as the common language ends their hopes for equality and emboldens the separatists.
We want to be free to pick the language that better suits our children in school. We've had enough with the language imposition. They do not allow us to speak Spanish here, or our kids are prohibited from learning in their mother tongue, which is Spanish.
On Thursday, Catalonia's Superior Court of Justice stepped in the debate, arguing that the teaching of Spanish in the region remains, quote, residual, and it urged authorities to teach a minimum 25% of the curriculum in Spanish, in addition to Spanish class. Education officials in Catalonia denounced the move as a breach of regional competencies and vowed to appeal to Spain's higher court.
The regional authorities in Catalonia have long disregarded court rulings. They've always been quick at trampling our freedom as citizens.
Spain's Conservative People's Party, center-right Ciudadanos, and far-right party Vox have so far failed to slow-walk the bill in its journey to final approval in the Senate. Cusay Cadrip, Barcelona.
Being in Pakistan, their hearts are with you.
He's a Noor Dari, a man of Pakistani region. He's heading a London-based anti-Muslim think tank, Islamic Theology of Counterterrorism. Dari is suspected to be sponsored by apartheid state of Israel. Dari, who left Pakistan almost 20 years ago, has been now at the center stage of what Islamabad says, a lingering disinformation campaign propagating that Pakistan is getting ready to normalize ties with Israel.
Pakistan government, they want to establish a relationship with Israel. This is the reason they sent a delegation, and not only the one person, a couple of persons, including the advisor of the prime minister. They flew from the London to Tel Aviv.
The claim was immediately dismissed by Pakistani prime minister as baseless.
Why would our delegation visit Israel when we have a policy not to recognize Israel? It is clearly a fake news. In a democratic society like ours, it is unacceptable to normalize ties with Israel because our entire nation stands by Palestinians.
Pakistan has been reportedly under intense pressure from the UAE and Saudi Arabia after some Arab rulers normalized their ties with Israel, notwithstanding the seething public anger in their countries. Both the UAE and Saudi Arabia reportedly threatened Pakistan to expel its an estimated 4 million expatriates if Islamabad resisted their pressure to normalize ties with Israel. This followed a few news anchors who were encouraged by Pakistani military to start debating in favor of normalizing ties with Israel, an allegation denied by army known for calling shots in country's foreign policy making. The media outlets in the apartheid state even find it hard to speak with a credible Pakistani journalist.
Many Pakistani journalists would even decline to appear and speak with me, speaking with from our studio in Tel Aviv.
Pakistani journalists who spoke recently with the Israeli news channel are either tainted with the corruption charges or had desperation to come into limelight through controversies. Anyone supporting Israel in Pakistan meets with instant condemnation at social and mainstream media, given Israel's unending mass killing of Palestinians and their forcible expulsion from the Muslim Holy Land from 1948 to onwards. The major thrust of the argument of the lobbies working for Israel and its allies has been to cite Arab countries abandoning Arab nationalism in occupied Palestine for an independent Palestinian state.